Once again, everyone, welcome to an all-new episode of the Drunk Friend Podcast. As always, we're your hosts. I'm Travis. I'm a little raspy because I've been having sinus stuff going on. And that over there is Alex. Hey, Alex.
Wow, you sound like a phone sex operator. kind of sexy.
Yeah, man. One that just smokes while on the phone.
You ever see that Beavis and Butthead episode where they call a... I think they go to Stewart's house and they call a 900 number because they don't have to pay for it. And the whole episode is just them saying, can you put the phone on your butt? And then the lady who's like this overweight, you know, hair in curlers, a bunch of weirdos around in her trailer, in a trailer park somewhere in Texas. And she's like, really? And she, you know, doing the voice, and her real voice comes out, and she sounds like this. And she puts the phone in her butt, and Beavis and Butthead seriously sit there all night. And she falls asleep, and her phone is on her butt the whole time. And she picks it up, goes, you guys are still there? And he's like, hey, put it back. Put the phone back.
Good. Man, they just don't make them like they used to.
New Beavis and Butthead stuff, not that bad. It's pretty funny.
Yeah, I was going to ask if you'd seen it. I have not, because I don't have whatever Paramount, Expedia, or whatever it is.
Yeah, you just have to accept that it's not what it used to be. It's going to be different, because it's totally different writers, and Mike Judge's voice is different, and it's a different culture, so they're going to react differently. The episode that I love that I think everyone should seek out is the one from the 2013 reboot where they wander into a call center. And that one speaks to like my soul, because I spent so many years in a call center, and it's so damn funny. That's one of my all-time favorite episodes. So
yeah, I see that little reboot that happened in the mid-2020s was early 2010s was pretty good. There was one episode where they try to get bit by a werewolf, since chicks dig werewolves.
Yes, that was in response to the Twilight thing.
Yes, and they get bit and get sick and think that they're werewolves.
Just get really sick.
It's so good. So good. Anyway,
there's another one where there's another one where Beavis, you know, it's always funny to see how Beavis turns into Cornholio. And in this one, he kind of stumbles upon a cult after taking a ton of opioids at the hospital. I forget why and how. And he keeps saying he needs TP, of course, because that's what he does.
You gotta have TP.
And it's all these people dressed in white just bringing him huge things of toilet paper. They're just like, oh, here you go, here's your TP. Like, they start worshiping him for some reason. It's funny.
Good stuff. Yeah. Well, speaking of nothing having to do with Beavis and Butthead, welcome to the year 2007.
Yeah, 2007. Nothing says 2007 like what?
What says 2007 to me? I don't know.
What's going on in your life?
I was graduating from college for the first time.
Was that intimidating, scary?
Good question. I don't remember. I think I knew that I was going to just go back to school. So it was like, yay, all right. And then I basically just turned around and walked right back in. So,
I guess, yeah, that's probably not a good question then.
I mean, it was cool. It was an interesting period of my life, because I think I said goodbye to a lot of people I never saw again that year. Because a lot of, you know, my undergrad friends, which is where you harden a lot of really solid friendships, because you're going through awkward stages of life, right? So everyone peaced out, and some of them stayed in contact and some didn't. Some I'm surprised by who did and I'm surprised by who didn't. So that's just how it goes. Yeah, there was that. I guess that would be like the lone bright spot, because 2007 in general was kind of a shitty year, at least for me personally.
It was pretty bad, like in terms of like world events and stuff like that. And we'll get to that later. I remember this for me. This was the year that I got really sick of living by myself in an apartment. So I went on Craigslist, looked at like roommates. This is 2007, remember? Mm-hmm. And I found a house. I picked it out. I went there that afternoon. I introduced myself. I met their two dogs. And then like a month later, I was moving in. It was the only Craigslist ad I ever answered. And and they were like such nice, good people. Like, I am so freaking lucky to have found that ad. I ended up living there for about 5.5 years. And I still remember their dogs, Luca and Maynard, Maynard the pug, who would jump on my lap and fart and then jump off.
Dang, that's a Maynard. That's a Maynard move right there.
Yeah,
that's
a Maynard pug right there. That's a Maynard pug. and one time, I guess Luca the dog was an American bulldog. So she was like, you know, big 75, 80 pound dog. She got so attached to me that one random day, my room was upstairs. That was like my room, and the other three people lived in rooms downstairs. One day Luca just decided to take a crap in front of my door.
Oh my God. Like,
I don't know if
that's an affront.
I don't know if she was like mad that I was gone, or she was trying to send a message, like, you know, the horse head in the guy's bed in The Godfather. Or what, if she's trying to intimidate me, or if it's a sign of affection. But I came home from work one day, and there was a huge steaming pile right in front of my door.
My God.
And I was like, I don't know what to make of that. But I miss that dog. I miss those people. Good friends. Played golf with Ryan, one of my roommates, for a few times. It was a nice time for me personally. Yes, I answered a Craigslist ad, and I not only survived to live the tale, but I found friends and roommates through that one ad that I responded on, yeah, on Craigslist.
And a surprise lump of dog shit. You found that as well.
Is Craigslist still a thing? Like, I haven't even thought about Craigslist in a long time.
It is. I don't frequent it like I used to, because I used to...
Looks exactly the same.
Yeah. They didn't really do a lot of updates, which is kind of its charm, I think. It was always kind of simplistic. But I used to, you know, poke around in there for... see if anybody was getting rid of some video games or something like that.
Yeah.
But not anymore.
I do remember seeing a few, like, you know, like, I'm dumping this, you know, Sega Saturn. Do you want to come get this? And I never, you know, I was broke at the time. So it was, collecting was not on my radar a whole lot unless I could get some good deals. But 2007, we've got gaming, we've got sports, we have a really awful year for music, especially radio hits.
Yeah, oh boy. And stinkers. Maybe it's just us being old, you know, I'm willing to admit, but boy, did I not like any of this.
you're just turning into me now.
I know, I'm finally at Alex, and like maybe I'm at the same, you know, mindset you were during this period. I caught up. You want to start with music just to get it out of the way?
Yeah, we should, yeah. I was not listening to the radio at all whatsoever. I wasn't going to clubs. I was going to shitty dive bars in St. Paul on Snelling Avenue. I was not paying any attention whatsoever to Apologize by Timbaland. I'm sure I would know the song if I heard it, but otherwise, no. There's also Crank That by freaking Soulja Boy. I haven't even heard the name Soulja Boy in about 15 years.
Oh, I remember that Apologize song because I never knew the words, which is bad because it's a very popular song and it's not a hard song to understand. But I would just hear it like at a club where it was like not clear, and I always thought it was saying, "It's too late to call me John." Like, it's too late to call me John. But he's like saying too late to apologize. But I was like, why is they even calling him John if that's not his name? Like, why is that?
That's a great misheard lyric right there.
I guess. I don't know. But then when I listen to it now, knowing what it says, I'm like, how did I ever think it was call me John? What is wrong
with
me?
That's pretty fast. Yeah, that's interesting. I'm trying to think, like, what other misheard lyrics I can think of that are that confusing.
Wrong.
Yeah. And I can't come up with anything. Like, you turned apologize into call me John.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever heard a bigger discrepancy.
It's not even close. And honestly, I never admitted it out loud until just now in front of hundreds and hundreds of people. So judge me now, I guess. But in 2007, I was like, it is too late to call me John because my name is Travis. And you know that. So,
well, I know it now.
Yeah.
I didn't know it before. I was going to call you John, but I changed my mind.
Well, now it's too late. You see?
There's also Party Like a Rock Star by Shop Boys. I don't have the slightest idea what any of those things are.
It was number 3 most played song in that year, apparently. I wrote it down here thinking somebody would know it, but you don't either. Okay.
No. Now, Stronger by Kanye, I know that.
Yeah, you know that one. Rihanna's Umbrella, you got to know that
one. Of course.
You have
of course.
A beating heart.
That song was yours. Freaking everywhere. Yeah. No, no avoiding that song, even if you tried. Ella, A.
Yep. Ugh. And then one that's very popular for misheard lyrics, the old Fallout Boy number, This Ain't a Scene, It's an Arms Race. But when it's sung, I don't even know what it sounds like. It doesn't even sound like words to me. But I do remember that song getting played a lot.
You wrote it on the sheet as "This ain't a scene, it's an arm race," which makes me think it's a race of dudes running on their hands.
Yeah,
which is a funny visual.
That is funny,
especially when it involves Fallout Boy. So I think that's interesting. But otherwise, I wouldn't know that song.
Yeah, I don't hear it as much anymore. But there was a point in my life where, I mean, it might have been like my college age friends were super into it. I wasn't into that scene. But that song got played to the point that it started to just infuriate me from the very first, like the opening note. I was already like, all right, well, I'm going to leave. Became one of those.
The most I dipped my toe into that whole world was probably AFI. And there were a couple of their songs that I thought were decent. Like one was, and just like the song you described, you can't understand any of the words. Because the singer is just unintelligible. It's break down.
Man, you nailed it. That's beautiful.
I don't even know. I know the song. I know the band, but I have no idea what the hell that guy is saying. But,
and I think what bothers me about it, like, I'm pretty used to listening to incoherent bands and stuff, but I think it's because
that's like Nirvana.
Yeah, like that sounds like it should be intelligible, and I can't hear it. Like it sounds like Simlish, and I think that's what annoys me about it. I'm like, dude, just enunciate a little bit.
Like, it sounds like it where you have to like when you're listening to like Gaelic or like a really obscure language, and it's like, is that German or is that French? Or is that, like, it's kind of English, but not really? It's kind of like how Spanish people perceive Portuguese. I've learned that it's close enough, but it's not. There's certain things that are certain that are really off. Like, there's French words in there. There's some Italian.
It's almost like the guy was like, I bet you I can make a whole album without touching my tongue to the top of my mouth. And they were like, I bet you can't. He's like, I'll do it.
Without my lips coming together.
Yeah. And then they did. And they apparently did pretty well. A lot of fans. So those were songs that were everywhere. You probably recognized more than Alex and I did. But then there's a pretty good little crop of rock albums that came out in 2007 that I was pretty jazzed about.
Yeah, for sure. Radiohead In Rainbows came out in 2007. And at the time, I was not really paying attention to Radiohead very much. I loved the Bends. I loved OK Computer, but I didn't really like Hail to the Thief, so they kind of like went off my radar for a while. But when I went back to In Rainbows years later, I think it's every bit as good as like their best stuff. I think it might be their best album.
Really?
Maybe that's a hot take, but I think In Rainbows is really good. I think the songwriting, just the vibe, the guitar sound, Tom York is at his Tom Yorkest. I think it's good. I think it's really good. There are two songs on there that just kill it every time. It's House of Cards and Jigsaw Falling Into Place. Like, you can't go wrong with those two. They're both brilliant songs.
Yeah, like that. I saw them in concert that year, actually, the In Rainbows tour. And I wasn't as high on the In Rainbows then. I think that one's a real big grower in their catalog. Like, that took me a long time to warm up to. I didn't really care for it when it came out, or like for like 8 years after, because I just avoided it. I was like, that's just not for me. But then, you know, like you said, after a while, I kind of revisited it and it grew on me quite a bit. But the I'm just reminded of this concert suddenly, because I went there with this guy that I barely knew. I worked with him, and he was into music and he liked Radiohead. And he told me, he's like, hey, they're playing in DC, you know, a month or so from now. Do you want to go? And I was like, dude, I would love to. Hi, my name's Travis. You know, basically now we're getting to know each other after we've had this agreement that we're going to go to this concert together. And it rains the whole time, like all the way up the interstate, four-hour drive, rained the whole time we were there. And there was like severe flooding that Radiohead actually refunded like 5,000 tickets for people that couldn't make it to the show, which is pretty cool of them to do. And it wasn't even like prove you were in a flood kind of thing. It's like, if you didn't make it to the show, you can get your money back, right?
Listen, we need to see your pants. Yeah. We need to see the water line.
Exactly.
We need to see your vehicles. Yeah.
Yeah. No questions asked. But it did. It rained the entire time, to the point that on the way back out to my car, and we were at it was an outdoor pavilion. And so, like, there were people on the lawn, or what we used to be a lawn. And then we were under the pavilion, but like right near the edge, so that like water was just dumping right beside of me.
Holy cow.
I was drenched in a parka already, like completely under a building, so to speak. But on the way back out, like, there was standing water like up past my ankles that we had to wade through to get to our car. And like in DC, like in a metropolitan.
That's
kind
dangerous.
Of zone. It was nuts. It was nuts. But worth it. We got to see a pretty good concert. They put on a good show.
That's awesome. I've never seen Radiohead. They're like probably number two on my, behind Tom Waits, they're like the band I want. And I'm never going to see Tom Waits. He's too old, unfortunately, but there's still a shred of hope I'll see Radiohead someday. That's really cool. That's awesome.
Yeah, it was a good time.
Yeah. And I like that you said it's a grower. It's a grower, not a shower.
That's right.
And I think that, this is the theory I have of that. I think the first track is terrible. The first track on that album is awful. It's not awful, but it's just like, what is this doing on this album? And it's the first freaking track. It's that weird, it's called 15 Step, and it's that weird, like, dancey, noisy, it doesn't belong, it belongs on Kid A. It does not belong on this collection of songs.
There's some leftover Kid Anus. Did I say Kid Anus? So, cut me off.
Kid Anus. Kid Anus.
Why did I say that? I'm so sorry. I didn't mean it like, I meant like A-N-E-S-S.
Nah, we knew what you meant.
Okay.
But if the album just started at Body Snatchers, the second track, I think it would be more of a shower than a grower.
You might be right about that, actually. Yeah.
But yeah, that's one of my favorite Radiohead albums for sure. I think it's might be their best. It's either that or The Bends for me.
Wow. But, all right. Well, what about Type O Negative? Your boys coming through. It was probably their last album, right?
Boys from Red Hook, Brooklyn. Red Hook section of Brooklyn. Type O Negative, dead again. Love this band. This was their last album because Pete died. Lead singer Peter Steele and bass player Peter Steele died, I think, in 2010.
2010. I remember the apartment. I was in an apartment for the exact calendar year of 2010, and I have weird memories of that because I can remember where I was when I read the news, I guess.
So oh,
I know,
really?
I know he definitely died Steele? That year. Yeah, I was like, I was like in my living room on my laptop and chatting with people probably on AIM still. And was like, holy shit, guys, did you hear about Peter Steele? And they're like, is that a porn star? I was like, no, you fucking assholes. You don't know who Peter Steele is?
Yeah. I remember being at work and finding out. And honestly, my reaction was like, I guess, you know, like the guy has sung about death for decades. So this isn't a big surprise. But no, Dead Again was a good throwback to their early stuff, but when they first started the band, coming out of the band Carnivore, and when they started doing Slow, Deep, and Hard with Type O Negative. And Dead Again has, like, it's only 10 tracks. They're all really long. It's more progressive. There's a bit of thrash in there. It's kind of a weird album, but it's got some humor. I did see them on this tour. It was my fourth time seeing Type O Negative live, and I'll reiterate, there was no better bang for your buck than seeing Type O Negative live, because they never charged more than $20 for a concert ticket, even as late as 2007. I paid like $18 to see three bands. Jesus. And see one of my all-time favorites live. It was great. I got to shake Johnny's hand before this show. Johnny, I can't remember the last name, but the drummer, his hands like completely engulfed mine. he's a big dude. But yeah, love that album. It's good. What's funny about this album is that when your Polykill Get Fit room, your the little section of your Discord, you guys all convinced me to start jogging. One of the albums I put on my I was gonna say iPod but I was gonna say
yeah, we know you don't have one of those.
I did have this album on a iPod at one point, but
right, yeah.
I had it on my phone, you know, as MP3s because I'm an old person. But as I was jogging, I thought it was hilarious to jog to Type O Negative because it was just such a complete disconnect, and it would always make me laugh. Right. Like every 30 seconds, I'd kind of chuckle to myself, like, look at me, I'm jogging to Type O Negative. This is the dumbest thing I could possibly do right now. And there is a 14-minute song on this album, so I'm an idiot. But I'll always remember me jogging where we used to live in our old neighborhood. Good memories of that. Listening to Type O Negative and laughing, and jogging and having fun.
It's really hard to jog and laugh, man. That just gets you even more out of breath.
I'm not like guffawing. I'm just going like. But yeah, there's also Ulver, Shadows of the Sun. That album is even darker and weirder and more fun than Type O Negative Dead Again. I just wanted to point that one out because I think it's among their best, and they're one of my favorite bands. So that's all there is to that.
Of course.
If you've never heard of Ulver, or you've never heard of Shadows of the Sun, check it out. It's a mood. It's different. It's dark. It's weird. They do a really good cover of a Black Sabbath song on there that's unlike, completely detached from the original, that I really like. It's worth checking out, but just wanted to point that one out.
Right on. And an album that I find to be unironically amazing is Death Clock's The Death album. That came out in 2007. Brendan Small just...
That's right.
Knocking it out of the park.
I was shocked at how good the music was from... Metalocalypse and from this Death Clock album. I was like, this has no business. This is way better than like 90% of metal bands out there. Like,
no joke.
The riffs and the creativity and just, you know, it's funny. Like, it's, how do you not get into Thunder Horse or Briefcase Full of Guts or
Mermaider?
Mermaider's a killer. Yeah.
Yeah. Mermaid.
And I think Death Harmonic, one of the last tracks on that.
Oh,
really,
yeah.
Good.
They have like a string section all of a sudden. Yeah. It's great. That show is awesome. It's one of my all-time favorites.
Yeah, I want to run back through it at one point. And then a complete diversion from metal and rock, The Shins, Wincing the Night Away, one of the more well-reviewed and well-received albums of all time. Came out that year, and I'm a moderate Shins fan, but I know all my Shins peeps out there are real high on this one.
Well, I'm glad you brought them up because they are from Albuquerque, New Mexico.
What? I didn't know that.
They're like kind of, you know, it's kind of tacky to say like, oh yeah, they're the pride and joy of this town, but like Albuquerque doesn't have a whole lot. They have Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul and not much else. So The Shins, they stand out as a huge success story out here. Their shows sell out in like a few hours. They're okay. I'm not really into the whole indie rock scene from the mid 2000s. Not really my thing, but I like James Mercer. I think he writes good songs, the lead guy there. So I do like some of his stuff. So yeah.
Yeah, I've never been a strong follower, but this album did come on my radar in 2007, so I have fond memories of it. It's good stuff.
Let's do a quick email. I'll read it here. Josh Lopez writing us once again. Hello, Josh.
Hello, Josh.
His email is called Coulda, Woulda, Shoulda, or I should say Coulda, Woulda, Shouldas. He says, hey again, guys. Hi again, guys. Trav, did you hear about the leaked Castlevania Symphony of the Night Gamecom prototype? Well, Trav, did you?
I did. I did hear about that. And it was right after I got my complete Gamecom set. I was like, man, look at me. I got all the Gamecom games. And then they were like, actually, look at this prototype. So close.
And you have every Gamecom game?
I don't want to brag, but yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Was that hard to get?
All 22 of them? Nah.
It wasn't?
Okay. Nah, nobody wants those fucking things.
I just wanted to know if there were any that were like rare or like hard
there
to
is.
Get.
There's okay. one. I got lucky to get it. You're never going to believe which one is the rare gem for.
I think I can guess. Is it a Wheel of Fortune game?
Yeah. Wheel of Fortune 2.
I remember hearing about that, actually. So, yeah.
More wheel, more fortune.
That's not surprising. Two wheel, two fortune. But, he goes on to say, it might be old news by now, but it had me thinking about other games that were canceled before release. I just want to mention, again, the Castlevania Symphony of the Night Gamecom prototype is unbelievable. Like, when you see the footage of that, it is unbelievable. Like, it'll blow your mind. It's like... It looks kind of like it should, like, you know, Symphony of the Night. It's almost completed. It's, I think it was Skeleton Stop Fighting or whatever that channel's called. It's a terrible name for a channel, I always thought. But Stop Skeletons from Fight. What the hell kind of a name is that? But I am just venting. But they did like a, you know, 4-hour video on it or whatever. And I remember seeing footage of it and being like, holy crap, like this looks not only does this look playable, but this looks good. So
yeah,
it's a shame that that didn't get released.
It looks like they emulated it in the video or somehow, because that does not look like what a Gamecom screen looks like. It looks so much worse.
Yeah, I was gonna say, when I see like Gamecom, I usually expect the previous screen to fade for a second.
Yeah.
And then see the next one like pop in, and that's kind of the visual.
Yeah, there's a lot
dissonance.
Of, I don't know what you call it, just trails of stuff going on. I have Sonic, I think it's Sonic Jam.
Yeah.
For that. And the sprite's so big and he's so fast, it's absolutely pointless to play. Absolutely okay. Just dumb.
Yeah.
But in a fun way, as in like when people come over, I'm like, dude, look, come here, look at this fucking shit. You're never going to believe this.
Anyway,
go on. I'm sorry.
Josh says, do you two have any favorite unreleased games? I immediately think of the unfinished N64 Mother 3 game. Interested to hear your thoughts. Thanks as always, Josh Lopez.
I kind of do. I've always had like a curiosity around, you can play the ROM of what's there, but the California Raisins game on the NES always intrigued me as a kid, because I was kind of California Raisin crazy as a little boy. And when I heard that there was could potentially be a California Raisins game, I said, whoa, hold the phone. You're telling me I could play with the California Raisins on my NES? And they're like, yeah. And then it never happened.
Well, have you played it then?
Yeah, I played a couple of the levels. It's not terrible.
Is it finished?
No, I think there's only a handful of levels that are done.
Oh,
but you can emulate what's there. But you can tell that, yeah, this was going to be a pretty good time.
Right on. Yeah, I want to use this email as an excuse to bring up the book from Bitmap Books called The Games That Weren't. It's a huge-ass book. Let me count how many pages real quick. There are 642 pages, and Whoa. It covers it covers a lot of really prominent games that went unreleased from 1975 all the way to 2015. And it's a really good, it's such a well put, you know, it's a bitmap book, so it's really well put together. It's a great looking book. And it's got a lot of great content in it. So check that out if you're into unreleased games and like stories of why stuff doesn't end up getting released. It's usually like the publisher ran out of money or the system sucked. The dev team only had two people. Like, there's a lot of interesting stories in there. The game that the unreleased game that I like is it was a licensed beat 'em up for the Super Nintendo for The Shadow. And I thought it was pretty good. It was very reminiscent of Batman Returns for SNES. And it was basically just like more Batman Returns. I thought it was pretty good. And I did a video on it like a couple years ago, I think. And I remember liking it because I was like, wait, that game or that franchise got a game, a Super Nintendo game, and it's pretty much done and it never got released. So I checked it out and it's good. I thought that one was good. That's the first game I think of.
Yeah, that's, man, it sucks. I think when they're good, it seems like most of them that you hear about are like, yeah, that was going to be decent.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, I think it's because the movie didn't do so well.
Yeah,
in theaters.
That was the reason given for the California raisins, was because of dwindling popularity. So
there there's only so many Christmas specials they can do. I mean, let's be honest.
Yeah, I guess so. That's true. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Thanks, Joush, and the N64 Mother 3 game, obviously a legendary one that we're all, you know, a little sad about.
Yeah, especially that's one of those unreleased games where you actually get to see still shot, you know, like screenshots and character models and stuff like that. So it feels like we really lost out, but who knows? Might have been terrible.
Who knows? Yeah, it could have been. It could have very well been.
Well, fancy meeting you in a podcast like this. My name is Captain Drachma, and I'm one of the co-hosts of IndieQuest. On this show, we dive into the amazing worlds of indie video games and attempt to determine where they rank on our own rating system, something we call the Questlog. If that sounds like something that might trip your trigger, join me and my co-host, Blinkin' Frantic, on our adventure. You can find IndieQuest wherever podcasts are heard and on PolymediaNetwork.com, the best website on the internet.
And now to Alex with sports.
Okay, let's go. 16-0 Patriots. They go undefeated in the regular season, only to lose to the New York Giants and Eli Manning and Plaxico Burress.
Was that the year that Plaxico legged himself?
No, I think that was that offseason, if I remember correctly. If it wasn't that offseason, it might have been a little bit later. It was while he was on the Giants, though. But
something weird happened that game, like Amani Toomer got like a football stuck in his helmet or something.
It was David Tyree, a guy, Amani Toomer, who would actually be kind of cool because he's a name. Yeah. I think he's like I remember that guy like when he played for Michigan way back in the day. But no, it's just some rando named David Tyree who caught a heave from Eli Manning. I think that play is kind of overrated.
Doesn't he just like pin the football to his helmet or something like that?
He does, yeah. I mean, he leaps between two defenders, grabs the ball with one hand, with both hands, but then one hand falls down, so he ends up pinning the ball to his helmet with one hand as he falls to the ground. It was third down. It was only third and 10. It wasn't desperation. It wasn't the end. It wasn't the complete end of the game. It was, I don't even think it was within 2 minutes. I think that play's a little overrated. I think there's better.
All right.
It's one of those where I go, like my dad.
You know who wasn't overrated in 2007 football? Those goddamn Detroit Lions.
Lions went 0-16. Shout out to Captain Drachma on that one. Man. But what amazed me is that team actually had talent. Like, Dante Culpepper was their starting quarterback for, I don't know, 2 weeks before he inevitably got injured. They had Megatron, Calvin Johnson. They had Kevin Jones, who was a pretty good running back.
Yeah.
That's basically it, though. I don't know. I remember looking, when I put this together, looking at their defense, their roster, I did not even recognize a single name on their defense. Good job, Lions. That's how you tank. And they inevitably tanked for, I think, Matthew Stafford. But But the real reason sports should be highlighted in 2007 is because college football was completely insane.
Insane.
Insane. The most fun college football season of all time, let's be honest.
Still referenced. Anytime you're in a Reddit thread and for college football, somebody makes a reference to how insane 2007 was. It is the potentially the year that like the universe flipped. Like that might have been the when the Berenstain Bears got spelled weird. Like, it could have all this might be part of why.
That's your reference. They changed that A to an E and everything changed.
Yep.
I mean, if you look at the title game, which the BCS title game, which was LSU beating Ohio State, you're not going to like, oh, well, whatever. That sounds like rank and file college football. But number one, both teams had two losses. And number two, this was a completely crazy year where Appalachian State, where is Appalachian State? Do you know?
First of all, it's Appalachian State.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
You got to put the ch in there. That's the way we do it. And it's in Boone, North Carolina.
Is that near you or?
Is it not like
if you had to drive there, is it like 3 hours, 4 hours?
Yeah, about 3 hours. Yeah.
Okay.
So I mean, you don't know anything really about this area, but it's like kind of between like.
It's in the hills?
Like Asheville and like where, you know, Dolly Parton land, like Dollywood. Like it's in the mountains.
Okay.
And it's the only thing in the place where it is.
That team, they are not a Division I school. They are Division II. They're used to playing schools out in North Dakota, South Dakota, and Montana and stuff. They beat the number 5 team in the country, Michigan. Big, bad, mighty Michigan. They beat them. And that was like in the first week of the season. So that set the tone.
And set Michigan back about 15 years.
Was that Rich Rod? Was Rich Rod the kid? Or was that Lloyd Carr?
That was the nail in the Lloyd Carfin. I'm sorry I did that. Lloyd Carr's coffin. Yeah. I'm pretty sure this would have been his last year. I can't imagine he went beyond this. But like, it destroyed. I mean, Michigan wasn't the same after this game for over a decade. They're only just now kind of becoming top tier relevant again.
Yeah, that's true. The way you describe the Lloyd coffin makes it Lloyd sound like a brand of coffins. You should buy Lloyd coffins. Here's 20% off in the mail for a Lloyd coffin.
2007 was his last year.
Was his last year? Okay, yeah. He's definitely going to get fired if he's losing to Appalachian State. One other thing to point out about the college football season, the team ranked number 2 in the AP poll throughout the entire year. Anybody who was ranked number 2, they lost 7 times in the span of 9 weeks. And we're talking West Virginia, California, South Florida, Boston College. Who are these guys? Like, what are these aren't football powerhouses, like not even remotely. And they're all ranked number 2 and they all lose one by one.
Yeah, in Boston College that year had A1 Matt Ryan.
Matty Ice.
So, and they were actually, you know, they're pretty good that year. They were number 2 when they came to Blacksburg. We were number 8. And we led 10-0 for up until the fourth quarter. And in the last 2 minutes, we got Matt Ryan. And that sticks out to me, one, because I stood in the rain the whole game, and along with many of my friends, and we all had our phones ruined. Which sucked. And anytime to this day that we play Boston College and they play like an old highlight of the what they call a rivalry, which isn't really a thing between these two schools. We just play each other a lot because a rivalry. We're not. Yeah, whatever. They always just show the clips of that game from now 16 years ago. That's all they show. They don't show the several times we beat them for ACC championships or just the numerous times that we bludgeoned them when they had like Doug Flutie or any number of Hasselbacks. No, never show that stuff. Just show that one time. Matt Ryan had 3 good plays with 2 minutes left.
Are they still
I'm
making
not upset.
Clearly. Are they still making Hasselbacks to go to Boston College to beat Virginia or to lose to Virginia Tech?
I don't know. We could use another one.
Is there a Tony Hasselbeck out there that's going to join Boston College and eventually lose to?
And they all look the same. Those brothers are nearly identical. I can never tell them apart.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. When I saw Tim Hasselbeck on ESPN one time, I was like, wait, isn't he supposed to be backing up Andrew Luck in Indianapolis? Like, what the hell is this guy doing on TV? And I realized that was not the same guy. But, yeah, another couple teams that were in the top five most of the year. College football stalwarts, Kansas and Missouri. Oh, what? Man. That's how crazy this year was. And
upside down.
In addition to that, the number one and number two teams ranked in the nation, they lost during the same weekend three different times, which I don't think has ever happened before. I mean, college football goes back 4,000 years. I'm sure it's happened sometime during that time, but it had not happened in the, I don't know, 20th century, 21st century, whenever. But yeah, no, it's just a crazy freaking year, just completely upside down, as Trev said.
Upside down.
But 2007 also had Barry Bonds passing Harry Aaron.
The call at Wrigley Field. Have another beach wave Budweiser for Harry Aaron.
But yeah, he hit number 756, and this was right in the middle of like the Game of Shadows book coming out, and Bonds is like avoiding the media, and it's like, dude, your head grew four sizes in the past 2 years. Like, dude, you can't freaking turn your back to this much longer. It's freaking ridiculous. But anyway, but then we've got three throwaway things. Boss, the Red Sox win another World Series, sweeping the Rockies. Nobody cares. The Anaheim Ducks beat the Ottawa Senators in five. Nobody cares. The San Antonio Spurs beat the Cleveland Cavaliers. Some people might care because that's LeBron's first finals. But otherwise,
I care. I'm a big LeBron fan.
Are you really?
Yeah, I love LeBron.
Do you remember that then? Like
he, I do.
I think the second best player on the team was like Drew Gooden with his weird neck hair.
Yeah, they were garbage. There was a...
Yeah, they were terrible.
There was a game in there, though, where I think they might have still lost in overtime, but he scored like their last like 42 points.
You're talking about that Pistons game. I watched
the Pistons
live.
Game. I guess they won that game then. Yeah.
Yeah, they did win that game. He scored, I think, 48, and he scored like the last 30 or something completely insane like that. It was a superhuman performance. Like he carried, it was the most blatant case of a guy carrying a team to way further than they deserve to go, but they were an awful, awful team. Without LeBron, not awful, awful, but you know,
might not even made the playoffs if he wasn't.
They would have been probably top six lottery, something around there.
Yeah.
They would have been, had a high draft pick, but, yeah, that's it for sports.
All right. Now to gaming. And of course we just got the PS3 and the Wii last year. So we're still riding high on some of that new.
Yeah.
And, you know, Call of Duties are coming out. Call of Duty 4, Modern Warfare, everybody eating that up. I mean, god dang, everybody.
I was, yeah, at least for a little while, because that was what everyone was playing. I was playing a lot of first-person shooters, multiplayer especially, but I couldn't tell you a single thing about Call of Duty 4, Modern Warfare. Couldn't tell you a single thing about the maps or any of the features or anything about it. I just remember it existing and it was there, and then I moved on to the next thing.
I played World at War a fair bit more than Modern Warfare, but I remember the campaign of Modern Warfare having a segment where you're like belly crawling with a ghillie suit, and I thought that looked so good for the time. I was like, dang, dude, this ghillie suit looks fucking legit. I don't know if it holds up now, but at the time I was like, dad, get in here, look at this ghillie suit.
That is accurate though, like what you say, like it looked better than anything else at that point, because if you remember the era, military first person shooters were freaking everywhere. Like you had Medal of Honor, you had god, there's so many I can't even remember the names of, but this was the game that separated Call of Duty from the rest of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. And then we got the sequel to the God of War.
The original.
This isn't Ragnarok. This is your grandpa's sequel to God of War.
That's right. Yeah. And I've never played a second of God of War 2. Have you?
I've not played. I only played the more recent God of War reboot game. It was all right. I'm not as into those. Rock Band came out, and we did play. We had that going up in the house. Everybody, you know, you got the drums and all that. I'm terrible at the drums. My
my little calf muscles get so tired. I'm like, just throw me on bass. Or just let me scream into the microphone when I'm drunk.
What songs are you playing when you play Rock Band? Like, are you playing, like, One by Metallica where you got the double bass drums going? Like,
yeah, probably.
like your calves are tired. Like, damn, you need to hook up with Shane Graham and get some calf exercise.
I know, right?
In there. Damn.
I know, right? We always made my buddy Jake, who was my original Polykill co-host, do drums.
Yeah.
He's big into drums, and he'd hang back there all night and just drum all night for us. So be like, hell yeah, you stay back there.
That's cool.
The rest of us will switch off guitars and honestly scream drunkenly into the microphone, because at that point it becomes just karaoke and everyone's just like, I'll sing the next song if nobody wants to. And you don't even need the microphone. Everybody's just like, why do we
yeah,
even
just
have
pass
it?
The mic to the next person. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm the same. I'm a horrific drummer. I can't, my arms and legs don't work together. Like, they just don't want to do it. So I play guitar or I sing. So
yes.
I'm in the same boat as you. I also wanted to bring up Uncharted for PS3 because this was a good year for original franchises that started basically in gaming. You know, everybody complains about too many sequels, and rightfully so. There are a lot of sequels, obviously, but in 2007 alone, we had Uncharted start, we had BioShock start, we had Mass Effect start, Crysis, Portal. Like, there's a lot of good stuff, like,
yeah,
starting this year. Like, it's kind of crazy. And I remember at the time people still being unhappy that there were too many sequels, because there was still God of War 2, Call of Duty 4, Metroid Prime 3, all that sort of stuff. So it's like, you can't win. So even any year flooded with original titles that ended up catching on to create more sequels that people hated, but not people hated, but yeah, it was just unusual. It's unusual to look back at this era and be like, hey, you guys remember, like, all you folks complaining about this stuff? There was this year where all this cool new stuff came out. And
I enjoyed Uncharted a lot. The thing was, I played the second one when it came out because I didn't give a shit about story.
Yeah.
And then, like, not long ago, like maybe last year, I went back and played the first one, the third one, the fourth one. And I thought the first one still held up pretty dang good. I thought it was still pretty fun. Yeah.
That's good.
Of course, Caleb and I turned that into a fun Tales series everyone can go listen to. But I still think those games, I mean, even the first one, I think, still holds up. It's not as good as the subsequent ones, but still pretty solid. So PS3 was rocking.
Yeah, PS3 was rocking. Do you have anything from the original Uncharted that you were able to cover in Tales that you can remember that you were particularly excited about, that we were like, oh, this is juicy content for the, like, what was the impetus to make Uncharted a ripe for Tales fodder?
That's a good question. I think Nathan, it makes it a little bit tricky because he's already got sort of a funny inner monologue. So telling a story, because a lot of fun for us is kind of projecting what we think the characters are thinking during the game, because it's not spelled out for you. But Nathan is pretty much an open book. You know, the scenario, like what's driving him to keep doing this is kind of interesting because it doesn't really add up. Like this is pretty dangerous shit he's doing just to get like a lamp out of the ground. And also, I think Sully is good fun fodder because he's just a funny mustache, and he just keeps popping up like, hey, kid, what's going on? What are you trying to do? And I don't know, just exploring some of those relationships is always fun. Also, Elena just miraculously shows up throughout the game, and it's like,
oh, it just pops out of thin air?
Yeah, like she should be dead a few times. She just keeps popping up.
That's funny.
Yeah. It's good.
But yeah, please, folks, listen, if you think Uncharted is stupid and ridiculous, I mean, it's, you might not think it's stupid. The game itself is not stupid, but the story is completely ridiculous, and it's 80s action game. It's 80s action movie fodder.
Oh yeah.
Is what I'm getting at. It's a clear you know, it's clear influences are Indiana Jones and all that sort of stuff. So go listen to Tales of the Lesser Medium for Uncharted if you want to get, if you want to open your mind to more comedic possibilities for Uncharted.
Yes, thank you.
How's
that
for a promo?
That was beautiful. That was beautiful. I'm not even going to have to put a commercial in this section of the show. Good job. Save people 30 seconds. Yeah, so we, so that's good. The Wii starting to bang out some good first party stuff, like Mario Galaxy comes out. Oh. I remember wanting to smash my Wiimote off my face a couple times playing it, but overall, really enjoying it.
I loved Mario. Mario Galaxy is wonderful. It's such a great. I don't know. There's something about the Mario series that just, for whatever reason, it nails it every time. Galaxy nailed it. Odyssey nailed it. 3D. What was it? 3D Land for 3DS. Yeah. I'm sorry, but. Yeah. Like, the main Mario, even handheld Marios, like, they all nail it. And Mario Galaxy nailed it as much as anything can nail it. Like, it's so freaking good. It's so good. It's so much fun. It's such a great rebound from Sunshine, which is an acquired taste, I'll say. It's not for everybody. I like it, but it's definitely kind of boring. And just kind of lame in certain ways. It's just like, really? I have to like clear this off with water? That's it? Like, that's kind of dumb. But that's just me. And apparently it's a lot of people. But it's Mario Galaxy. The point is, Mario Galaxy got everything right. I remember playing this at a demo station at my work. And I remember being late to get back to my desk every single day for like 3 weeks and getting in big trouble because of it. So,
Nice. Worth it.
Yeah, I've never played the sequel to Mario Galaxy, but I'm looking forward to that at some point.
Right.
Metroid Prime 3, I've not played Metroid Prime 2. And by way of that, I've not played 3.
But yeah.
I hear that's more maybe a weaker one of the trilogy.
I just wanted to list it here because I needed something to fill the Wii list, and that was a first-party title, so...
Hey, that's fair. That's fair.
I didn't know what else to put there.
Guitar Hero 3, of course, that comes out on everything, and boy, I sink some freaking time into some Guitar Hero 3. Legends of Rock.
Yeah, that is my favorite Guitar Hero.
I got a lot of nostalgia to that, man. So many good memories of hanging out in the apartment with everyone and just... playing the shit out of making songs now that I've ruined for myself because we played them.
That's
so much.
The one that has Dragon Force,
yeah,
Through the Fire and the Flames, which has been memed into oblivion over the years.
Yeah.
So,
yep.
Yeah, it was. What else is on that one?
There's Mississippi Queen.
Mississippi Queen.
Threes and Sevens from.
I think Trippin' on a Hole in a Paper Heart by Stone Temple Pilots.
Is that on there?
Yeah, that was always like the beginner song, and I like that song, so I would always start. That was a good warm-up song. And then I would go, I think there was an Eric Johnson song on there that I really liked that I would play. That one was really good. I think Metallica 1 was on there. The one I'm thinking of is Megadeth Hangar 18. That was the one I always went back to, because that one was really fun to play on that plastic toy guitar thingy.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of really good stuff on there, for sure.
But that brings I wanted to mention it's 2007. We've got three major home consoles. We're starting to get to the point where the consoles are blending together. Like, we're starting to get PS3, Wii, and 360. There's too many games that are on all three systems, and there's not enough stuff that's exclusive. And when we get to 360, it's like BioShock, Halo 3, and Mass Effect. I guess, obviously, Halo 3 is exclusive to 360, but BioShock's on PC. I think Mass Effect's on PC. Rock Band was everywhere. Guitar Hero was everywhere. It's hard to like differentiate years at this point in terms of gaming because everything was everywhere, which is both good and bad.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. 360 was kind of the one I ended up gravitating toward probably a little after this year, just because it was so easy to sync up with friends to play it. Like the online component was just so hassle-free, where I felt like the PS3, I don't know if it was just like not as user-friendly, or it was just something prickly about it. And so I ended up playing most multiplayer console stuff on the 360. So anything that was multiplayer outside of the, you know, obviously Xbox has like Gears of War and Halo. Those are mainstays. But anything else, we would always get on 360. And I feel like that's where I now associate in my head. And it's still kind of true in a way, where PlayStation is really strong single-player catalog. Like your Ghost of Tsushima and your Last of Us and your Spider-Man, that's right, and all that stuff. And 360 and Xbox has a lot of the, you know, and they facilitate that with their Game Pass stuff. They want you to bring your family and friends in, and Xbox Live's always been big for them. So that's kind of where the line's drawn. But yeah, for the most part, I like both. Yeah. They're both fine.
But that's awesome. Do you have any other memories? What else were you playing in 360 or anything else like that? BioShock, any of this stuff that was exclusive to it? Because I was not.
All I can remember, honestly, from this era is Guitar Hero 3. That's the only thing that sticks out in my head. Just because that was...
Well, that's the communal thing to play. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't even know if we ever turned it off, because we were just in and out going to like class and stuff. I think it just stayed on. You just walked up and grabbed a guitar. And what we really liked about this one that the subsequent ones didn't do was that you could play a song and then you'd enter your initials for your high score. We get kind of high score dedicated at one point in the house because we just played the songs over and over. And so we're trying to outdo each other. But then on subsequent versions, you would have to go all the way back to the main menu, switch profiles to user, and then play the song. And then it would add to your high score. So we liked it better where you could just pick up and play and then like tab down your initials after the fact. So after that, we didn't play for high scores anymore because it was such a hassle. You had to go back out through a menu, select a person just to play the song or whatever. So this was like the perfect setup for pass and play, high score chase, kind of hearkening back to like the arcade days of gaming. About as close to that as I got was Guitar Hero 3.
Yeah, we actually, at my workplace, I was so, you know, in retrospect, the job sucked, but it was really fun to... be a part of a big group of people that played Guitar Hero 3 at work on their break, on a projection TV in the break room. And we had a big whiteboard where we wrote down our scores, and everybody, Scout's Honor, you know, put their best score on there. And it was a lot of fun. That went on for months and months until I think we had a Wii Sports bowling tournament where everybody got a little too rowdy and then they shut everything down.
Aww.
So that was, that's how that stuff always ends. I think I was kind of the main proponent of that too, because when I get rowdy, I get loud. I'm like, yeah, you know, I'm like
a full Hetfield,
super Hetfield, and that voice carries. So it's my fault, but I'll own up to it because it was a lot of fun. But 360, PS3 starts to bleed together. Wii starts to bleed into it a little bit, even though of course it's Nintendo and they have their own stuff. But the handhelds stay kind of their own thing, which I really like. The DS, the big title there was Phantom Hourglass, Legend of Zelda. Do you have any experience with this game? I've never played this.
Phantom Hourglass, I like. It's the other one, Spirit Tracks, that I don't have high regard for.
I have never played that either.
Yeah, I think you could probably do a hard pass on Spirit Tracks. Some people like it, though. I think Rob Ring is a fan of that game, if that tells you anything. Maybe that doesn't.
Oh, it tells me a lot.
And I could be wrong. Sorry if I just lumped a big heaping turd on your plate, Rob. You're like, I hate that game. I'm sorry.
No, Rob, it figures that you like... No, I'm just kidding.
But Phantom Manor, I mean, it's okay. I like some DS games, but there's certain things about, like, using the stylus or blowing into the thing that I just don't ever jive with in certain games. And it was such a sparsely used gimmick sometimes where it's like, did you just put it in here because Nintendo told you to use it.
I exactly right. The only, like, if you're not doing an Elite Beat Agents kind of a thing where you're just tapping the screen, then I'm not interested, like, in your crazy little drawing stuff. Like, no thanks. But I did not know that about Spirit Tracks. That's interesting. But the PSP is also out there. And I remember playing, let me describe this station for you, for, because this is a weird thing I'm describing for people, I realized. Where I worked was, for a while, this is a strange thing to describe, but where I worked in, at this time in 2007, it was the Best Buy corporate office in 2007, 2008, 2009. And when you walk in, it's like an airport terminal. It's very strange. It's not like a place of work. First of all, there's like four buildings joined together and they all look like ships from the outside. They all look like battleships or something. So that's kind of intimidating. But when you go in, you go into this like main hub and there's... It's like an airport terminal. Like, which building would you like to go to? Would you like to go to A, B, C, or D? And I worked on D3. But on the main terminal, there was a pool table. There was a Wii station, a PS3 station, a 360 station, a DS station, and a PSP station. They wouldn't change the games on those too often, but what was there, I played the hell out of, and one of the games that was there was Ratchet and Clank Size Matters for PSP, and that was like, I remember playing that and being like, there's no freaking way this game can play on a portable system. Like, this is just too good. Like, it's too advanced. Like, how is this possible? Like, that was when I started to feel really old and like outdated and like behind the times, was when I played that game, because it's like, this is way too good to be like on a tiny little like PSP kind of a thing. Like, this should be a PS3 game. What the hell is this? It was it was a lot of fun. I put a lot of time into that game.
Yeah, but, man, that's awesome.
Yeah, that was that game is good. I have good memories of it. I couldn't tell you anything specifically about it because it's Ratchet and Clank. It's like Mega Man. It's one of those things. But I had a lot of fun with that.
Nice.
And then there's also the old PC. Team Fortress 2 came out that year, and I know that's a huge cult favorite with a lot of people. Crysis. The joke still exists today where... Can Crysis run on it?
Right.
Kind of a thing.
Hell, it did look fucking good, though.
No, that's the thing. It's like, there's a reason that joke came out, because it's like, Crysis was the most advanced game visually that existed. So it's like, you need top-of-the-line system. I had a friend that I went to tech school with that I kept in touch with for years and years. I'll never forget his reaction when Crysis was running at like... suboptimal, some like tiny little thing was like suboptimal, and he was freaking out, and it made me laugh. But there's a reason that joke exists. But Portal also started that year.
Hell
and
yes.
Portal's a wonderful game. If you haven't played it, you need to stop what you're doing, shut this podcast off, delete everything you own, and start playing Portal, because it's awesome.
Yeah.
And there's also one of my personal favorite games of all time, Unreal Tournament 3. And I still play this game at least once every few months.
Really?
And I play Unreal Tournament against the computer. It's kind of sad. The reason I do that, I don't play online. I don't care if there's online functionality. Unreal Tournament's a first-person shooter, for those that don't know. It's kind of futuristic, kind of crazy, Mortal Kombat-y, whatever. I don't know, but Unreal Tournament 3, I play that game to this day against the computer because I like the map so much. There are so many good maps that I enjoy. The game modes are awesome. There's capture the flag, there's vehicle capture the flag, there's a mode called Onslaught where you it's the capture modes, and you have to protect the modes, and then you go after the guy's base. stuff that's common now. But Unreal Tournament 3, I'm telling you, sometimes I wake up in the morning and I can still not only hear, but I can feel the sound of a guy getting run over by a manta in Unreal Tournament 3. It's like this satisfying, like, crunch sound.
Damn, man. And that was like almost an Apocalypse Now quote. It was crazy.
I love the sound. I love the smell of napalm in the morning, and I love the sound of a manta plowing over some random jabroni.
I've never played a single second of Unreal Tournament.
I don't know why I gravitated toward that series, but I love Unreal Tournament 3. I think it's great. I love the maps. I love the game modes. It's my shit. Not only that, but I created a specific playlist that reminds me of when I used to play that on LAN, you know, like with other mm-hmm. people. It's kind of pathetic, but whatever. I don't care. It's a playlist that reminds me of that time. I only bust it out like once a year or something, but yeah, it's one of those things.
That's cool. All right. So that's it for gaming. Let's go back to the email drawer. Let's pull one out. We got t-shirt from Blake. Blake says, "Hey, drunk friends. No need to read this on the pod. Well, guess what, Blake? You put it in the inbox, it gets copy and pasted right on over here to the sheet where we read it for the podcast. Sorry about that." He says, "I was just curious if Alex still had any of the SNES drunk t-shirts. I know he killed the Patreon account, but if there was a link or way to get one, I'd like to know. Thanks, guys. Blake." Get this man a t-shirt, Alex. Come on, man. I was going
to
say,
this is a good excuse to talk about shirts and merchandise and all that sort of stuff. I really want to get like a main hub store going, not only for SNES drunk shirts and all that. I really only want to have a shirt and a mug. That's all I really care about.
Yeah.
But I also want to get drunk friend stuff going, you know.
Yeah. I mean, and we have some over on Polymedia. You can check that out and get you a drunk fan t-shirt. We sold two.
Drunk friend t-shirt, drunk friend mug. I have a drunk friend mug. Pearl uses it all the time. And I want to get quality stuff, though. That's my hang up. I want to, my dream is to like have it supplied by Amazon. They have an application process. They said no. Aww. So I have to go someplace else. But I would love to be able to get like, the thing is I don't want to sell t-shirts that like everybody else sells. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want like crappy bootleg concert t-shirts, like stiff black t-shirts that are completely unwearable after like three washes. They're really uncomfortable. So I just want decent merch for people that are going, that if you're going to spend the money on merchandise, please make sure it's worth it. Like, cause that's my policy. Like, if this stuff is worth it, then I'm going to pay for it. So I want people to make sure, like, if you spend your money, it's worth it. So I'm trying to find a place that will sell good merch, not only for SNES Drunk, but for this podcast, Drunk Friend. So you folks can do this, can write in saying, "Hey, I am enjoying Drunk Friend from this delicious Drunk Friend beer mug," or something like that. I don't know. But yeah, that's the plan. That's what I wanted to lay out right here, right now.
You know what's funny? I think the very first interaction I ever had with our pal Dylan Charles over there at We Got Goosebumps and Split Up podcast, was he posted a pic of him sipping out of a Drunk Friend mug, and he's like, "Cheers, fellas!" And I was like, "Whoa, that's cool.
That's really cool. Thanks, Dylan, for buying that. That's super cool." But
I hope that was Dylan and not a false memory. But yeah, we'll get you a t-shirt there, Blake.
I want to make sure that one thing that bothers me, though, about those mugs is that they're not black all the way around.
I know. Why like, they stop part way? Why?
The handle's not black.
The handle's not black.
It's not square. It's not what I would have designed myself. So
It's frustrating. It just
bothers me. Like, if I'm going to buy something, I want it to be good. Like, if other people are going to buy stuff that involves something that I'm involved with, then I want it to be good. So
I'm with you.
I'm still on the search. I applied for Amazon. They said, who the hell are you? You suck. Sure. I want to kick your face and stomp your teeth. Yeah, it was bad.
Needlessly aggressive.
Aggressive. Jeez, they came to my house and kicked my dog and everything. And
get out of here.
Clyde hates those people and everything, but
I don't blame them.
Yeah, I don't blame them either. But that's how it is. I'm just trying to find something better than the most basic stuff, because I'm done with the most basic stuff. I'd rather, if I have an opportunity to get something better, I'm going to take it. So,
all right, that's good news. All right, Blake, you opened up a can of worms you had no idea existed there. Good work. All right, now to movies. And man, I got to say, movies pretty decent. I'm going to say these are some soft spots for me. A lot of good wacky comedies. Superbad came out that year. I like Superbad.
I love the cops in Superbad. They're my favorite part of the whole movie. Bill Hader and I think it's Seth Rogen is the other cop.
Mm-hmm.
So damn fun. Those guys are the best.
I haven't seen that movie in a long time, but I should kick it back up. That used to be sort of a not nightly watch, but just something we would always put in when we were way too drunk to finish a movie. We'd we'll just put that in. We'll just go to sleep watching that. Fall asleep watching Superbad.
Yeah, I thought it was good. I thought it was funny. Of course I thought it was good and I thought it was funny. It was everywhere at the time. What am I even saying? That doesn't add to any conversation. It doesn't
add to the conversation. Anything. How did it make you really feel?
How did it make me really feel? It made me really admire Bill Hader. Because I thought Bill Hader was just an SNL guy in 2007. And it was wow, Bill Hader's really freaking funny in this movie because he's a cop wearing these ridiculous looking glasses, and it makes me laugh.
It was also my first exposure to Michael Cera, who I adore.
Do you really? I would not have guessed that. You're a big Michael Cera fan?
I mean, he's just he's good.
He's got a good vibe.
He's just such him. He's so Michael Cera in everything, and that character you can only get so many miles out of. And I feel like we probably hit him. But, you got this, and then I think he's in Juno, which also came out that year, right?
Yeah. That's right. Yeah, it did.
Arrested Development, he's super-duper perfectly awkward in that.
He's perfect in Arrested Development, yeah.
I think Scott Pilgrim, I think he's in that, too.
Yes.
He plays a role, and he plays it well.
You know, it's funny you say that, and I think when most people think about an actor that plays themselves, they think of somebody like Jack Nicholson. You know, in the 90s and in the 2000s, it's he's just playing himself at this point. That's it. You hire this guy. Michael Cera is somebody that I never realized until now. He's basically playing himself in a lot of these movies.
Yeah.
Unless he's not, and I just don't realize it, but...
Yeah. I mean, I've seen him in interviews where I'm like, oh, he's still in character. But then I realized, oh, no, when I watch movies, I'm just watching Michael Cera.
Yeah, that's just how he is, yeah. I think that guy is, he's basically the Molly Ringwald of this era.
That's perfect. Whereas
Molly Ringwald, did you know anything she did in the 90s, after the 80s? Probably not.
Oh, man, she was in a movie I saw a couple weeks ago, a horror movie I watched, where I was like, why does that woman look so familiar? And it turned out to be Molly Ringwald. I was like, oh my God.
You might have recognized her if she was putting on lipstick in Detention, in Breakfast Club. but otherwise, no. That's funny.
I was trying to remember what that movie was.
I wanted to know if you've seen the movie Hot Rod.
Yes, dude, I love Hot Rod.
Dude, Hot Rod, I was going to say, if Trav hasn't seen Hot Rod, I'm going to be
love
mad. Because Hot Rod's freaking hilarious. The fights that the Andy Samberg character gets in with his dad. The dad is the whose name I can't remember. He's from the movie or from the TV show. Oh, God, what the hell is it called? The HBO show. Not something Wood. Deadwood. That's what it is.
Yeah.
It's the guy from Deadwood. He's his dad. He's on the bed. He's injured or something. And
Frank,
Andy Samberg wants to impress him and he wants to fight him one day. It's
so ridiculous.
Yeah. And of course there's him rolling down the hill scene that doesn't stop, which is laugh out loud funny, at least
and
for
just
me.
Chris Parnell, another guy who's like,
yes.
Does that guy play any other character besides aloof?
Chris Parnell?
Yeah. Yes. He's so good.
Excellent. And then we got one of your favorites, Walk Hard.
Another just parody, just a good time.
Yep.
John C. Reilly singing a lot in that, good singer.
He's a really good singer. He's really impressive. Yeah.
Yeah. Favorite part
of movies, that movie's what? Like kind of in the Anchorman. Is that a Judd? I can't remember if that's a Judd Apatow movie, but it's really freaking funny.
I think he at least, yeah, I don't think he directed it, but I think he was involved with it. And I think my favorite part of that, at least the thing that I used to quote a lot, was where his pa was mad that his brother died instead of him. And he'd always be like, the wrong son died. Because it's a parody of, like, you know, Johnny Cash and Ray and those movies that have come out, like...
That's right.
You know, it's just the very beginning of the movie, both of those movies, or all of those musician documentaries, always start out with, like, a very tragic thing that happened to them when they were a kid. And Dewey Cox, who John C. Reilly plays in the movie, his brother gets, like, hilariously severed in half. And it's, like, the most gruesome, hilarious... death scene ever, and the dad is like, oh man, that was my favorite son, the wrong son died. It's just, it still cracks me up.
Yeah, it's great.
The Simpsons movie, which was way better than anybody expected and still is funny. I watched it not long ago, still like it.
I've never seen it.
What, you never watched the Simpsons movie? Dude, it's
no,
it's still, it's good, it's good.
Okay, I'll take your word for it. It's one of those snobby hipster things about me that I don't like about myself, but I hold the early Simpsons seasons near and dear to my heart, like seasons 2 through 5 or 6. Really, it's seasons 2 through 9 are like really untouchable to me from a comedy standpoint, that like I don't want anything to do with the Simpsons after that. But I really should watch the movie at some point. It's stupid of me not to. I've seen scenes from it, but I've never sat down and watched the whole movie.
Yeah, it's pretty solid. I think most, at least the diehards in the old Simpsons subreddit, which you could imagine is just the most diehard of diehards. It's pretty well received among Simpsons fans at large.
Cool. So. I wanted to bring up Lars and the Real Girl. Have you seen this movie?
Never heard of it.
Oh, it's a fascinating premise because it's, what's his name? Ryan Gosling plays this guy who is from this Midwestern, upper Midwestern town. I think it's North Dakota, might be South Dakota. It's one of the Dakotas, if I remember correctly.
They get that all the time. They're not even upset.
Yeah. Well, whatever. But this guy is named Ryan Gosling, plays Lars, and he decides to bring home a doll as a girlfriend, like a blow up doll.
Okay.
And the reason this movie resonates with me is the reaction from his family. And it is hilariously accurate and just dead on. Like, yeah, that's pretty much what it would be like based on my upbringing and the people that I knew growing up.
These people
would be like, what the fuck is... I mean, they'd be like that, but they wouldn't say anything. It'd be lots of passive-aggressive, just... Yeah, it's a great movie if you haven't seen it. It's really well acted and well written, I think. But more importantly, we got No Country for Old Men. I'm really interested to see what you think of this movie.
Oh, I love it. I love it. And okay. There Will Be Blood. It was a great year because those two movies I kind of tie together in my head.
Mm.
Probably because I watched them around the same time. And I was, for both of them, I was like, damn, do movies get better than this?
Yeah. You weren't bothered by the ending of No Country for Old Men?
I don't want to disappoint you, but I don't really remember it. So I guess not.
Oh, really? Oh, people were pissed.
I'd have to think about it for a minute. It's been a while since I've seen it. Well, a movie that... In Spectacularly, though, There Will Be Blood. You know what? There was blood. I was like, dang, yeah. they delivered on that.
There was blood and there was a bowling alley.
And it's got Paul Dano in it, who's like my favorite. Love that dude.
Yeah. Yeah, that movie's intense. Paul Dano is really intense. What I love about that movie is that both actors, Paul Dano, who represents like one extreme, mm-hmm. and Daniel Day-Lewis represents the other extreme.
Old D-Day-Lewis.
Yeah. So they good. Both meet head on, and it's really intense. And it's a that's the opposite of No Country for Old Men, where there's like a really not a satisfying conclusion, but there's a conclusion and it's definitive.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty fun. I also, I like the movie Zodiac. I mean, that one obviously doesn't have much of an ending because we all know that the Zodiac killer was never really.
Have not seen it.
Caught. But boy, is that a fun ride. It's got a lot of cool actors in it. And, yeah, really riveting stuff. Bit long, but good.
Mm.
And then to tie it all into gaming, 2007 was the year that the documentary The King of Kong, A Fistful of Quarters came out and was actually, I guess, the time that I became familiar with Billy Mitchell. I didn't really know who he was until this documentary.
I don't think anybody did.
Yeah, I wasn't sure if like people on the message boards were like, oh, no, we knew. We knew. We knew
I'm
about
sure
Billy.
There was one message board out of about a few hundred thousand that did, but yeah, I had no idea this culture existed before seeing that movie, and I saw it a few years after it came out, and I was blown away. I need to go back and watch it again. I've only seen it once, but
it's fascinating. It really is.
It's really well made. I think it's great. Billy Mitchell's a perfect movie character. Perfect
yeah,
movie
dude.
Character.
Natural villain.
Yeah, I mean, you can think he's a villain. Some people gravitate towards that kind of personality. I don't know. Not me, but he's one of the all-time great video game characters, I'll say.
Sure.
Just from entertainment value.
I mean, he does look like he could just like straight face talk you into buying a car that you know doesn't work. Like that's just
it's
kind
the
of the charisma and the hair and the vibe
you get.
It's
the hair. It's the stupid American flag tie that he insists on wearing every time. It's like, dude, nobody cares. Like, what are you doing? Like,
what
just look like
doing?
A normal person for once. Are you able to? Apparently, he's incapable of doing that. Whatever. I don't care. But yeah. Billy Mitchell.
Yeah.
As my brother would say, Billy Mitchell, what a piece of work.
Man, that's a good way to say it.
He's a piece of work.
In 2007, The Sopranos came to an end. So within the confines of our podcast, The Sopranos have kicked up and they've kicked the bucket. I didn't watch anything but the first season or first episode of The Sopranos, but I do know about how it. I know about the fade to black ending because not only is that has it been 15 years, but it was memed essentially on just about every way it could be.
Yeah. That was a big deal because The Sopranos kind of were the flagship of, just that era. I think that we're still in of television where it's sort of displaced movies for storytelling a little bit, where you can tell bigger, longer stories through TV series. Like Sopranos was, I think, the first to do it. You also had Mad Men, The Wire, Breaking Bad. So many great TV shows over the past 20 years have kind of displaced movies a little bit. And the way Sopranos ended was a huge deal because it's like, where the hell's my ending? I need to know how these people end up. And you get the Don't Stop Believing with the black and everybody's freaking out thinking their cable got cut and their TV broke somehow. And it was kind of a masterstroke of manipulation in that point for just to screw with people. I enjoyed it from that perspective, but I didn't really follow The Sopranos. I didn't have HBO at the time. I couldn't afford any of that crap. But I knew Sopranos was a massive deal. One of the biggest. I mean, what you think of the Marvel comic universe right now is basically how The Sopranos was thought of back then. It was the be all end all of like story. Like everybody watched the show and everybody loved it, and you know loved all the characters and wanted to know what was you know how it would end and stuff like that. And it kind of just ended the way it did, and people were pissed.
People were pissed. They were, you know what? They were mad about it and made them Mad Men, which you mentioned earlier.
There you go.
So it started in 2007. Mad Men, never watched a bit of that.
I really haven't spent a lot of time with it either.
So, yeah. Chuck, I did watch like the first little bit of Chuck. That was the one my girlfriend at the time liked Chuck. We watched Chuck.
Mm. Don't remember that. I think it had a famous actress, if I remember correctly.
Yeah,
I want to say she was blonde, and I think it had like a guy that looked like Jim from The Office as the lead.
Yeah, it's the guy who's in a Marvel movie now as somebody.
Oh.
Captain Zinger? I don't know. Captain who? What's it? I don't know. I don't know Marvel stuff. He's a captain, though.
Well, he must be important.
And his name is, I think his real name is Zach. I'm actually going to look it up. Chuck Cast. His name is Zachary Levi. And the actress you're thinking
Zachary
of is
Levi,
Yvonne.
The guy that played Spock and...
I don't know.
Let me see. Oh, no. Okay. This guy's totally different. Who am I thinking of for... Oh, I'm thinking of Zachary Quinto. I got him confused with Zachary Levi. Sorry about that. But yeah, I have not seen... The point is, I have not seen Chuck. I have also had not seen iCarly.
Oh, man. That show is... I didn't like... Obviously, I was in college when this came out, but I had a younger nephew who was about the age where this was relevant, and I would, you know, have to hang out with him or whatever. He'd be watching it, and then I'd get sucked into it, and I'd be like, God damn, this show is actually really fucking funny. And to the point that, like, if I'd be scrolling through channels and it was on, I'd be like, look around, be like, nobody's paying attention. I'm going to fucking watch some iCarly judgment-free right now. Because it was funny. The brother Spencer's totally hilarious. The kids were goofy. It was a quality show, actually.
All right. We'll put that on the poster for iCarly when it gets released on DVD. Or I guess that's not a thing anymore. Well, when it gets released
on... What are you even saying?
Jeez. Super Nintendo cartridge, I guess. I don't know. But we also had Flight of the Conchords, which is seriously... The first season of that show is just...
So good.
It's golden. Like it's
ain't no party like your Nana's tea party.
That's right. And Nana's tea party don't stop. Yeah. The rhinoceros. Oh God.
Oh, so good. Man. I'm glad that we do these episodes because a lot of times when I'm looking back through years, I rediscover things and I saw Flight of the Conchords and I was like, oh my God, I know what I'm doing all day.
The rhinoceros. Oh man, when what's his name? I can't remember the bigger guy, the guy that does the David Bowie voice. I can't remember his name. I'm sorry, but when he does his section of the rhinoceros song, that dude just kills it. Where he's like the hip hopopotamus of the rhinoceros, rhyming of the top of the esophagus. Blah, blah, blah. I can't do that shit. But
yeah, is that Jermaine Clement?
Jermaine, yes, yeah. That's his name. That he just kills it. Like I was like, where did that come from? That does not look like it would come out of that guy, because that guy does not look like he can flow like that.
Oh, he flow.
Yeah, that guy's great. I think both those guys are so funny and so talented. So, yeah.
Yeah, good stuff. And I guess that wraps up TV. So now to notable events from the year 2007. And not
pretty
a lot of
bad.
Good things. Pretty bad stuff happened in 2007. Would you kick us off here with the first one?
Yeah, the Michael Vick dogfighting thing started this year to kick us off. I don't know if it kicked us off, but I remember happening that summer. That was horribly depressing to me. I'm a big dog person. So it wasn't that he did that. It was the revelation that was still a thing in the world somewhere. You know what I mean? Like I had no idea that was happening anywhere. And, you know, I'm sure it was happening somewhere in the world, but for it to be happening in the United States, you know, in an affluent, apparently, you know, evidently affluent area in the where Michael Vick was hanging out, it was definitely still happening, and it was just sad. It's just, why would you do that? Why? What for? What? It's just gross and useless, and yeah, it was just heartbreaking. And speaking of heartbreaking, I got a big thing about the Chris Benoit murders here.
Okay.
not a big thing, like a big rant, but I just want to talk about it a little bit because I know a lot of listeners know me as a wrestling aficionado, or at least a wrestling guy. 2007 was when I basically stopped watching, and the reason is because of the Chris Benoit murders. For those that somehow don't know, Benoit murdered his wife and his 11-year-old son in Atlanta, Georgia, in his own home. And he, Benoit at the time, to give some context, was considered probably the best wrestler in the world from a technical standpoint. Like, if you needed like a 4-star match out of a broomstick, you put Chris Benoit in the ring with a broomstick and Benoit is going to get it. Like, it's what they used to say about Ric Flair. Like, Benoit was that guy. He was that good. Like, he was intense. He was awesome. And people really gravitated to him, especially the internet wrestling community really loved him. They pushed him to a world championship win in 2004 at Madison Square Garden at the main event of WrestleMania. Like, that's how much he was loved. Let me take you back to 2007 when Chris Benoit was scheduled to fight, scheduled to wrestle, I think it was MVP, at some like random freaking pay-per-view, nobody cares, whatever, some WWE pay-per-view. Benoit doesn't show up, and everybody's like, what the hell? Like, he never doesn't show up. Like, he's as serious as a heart attack. This guy always takes wrestling as serious as it is. Where is this guy? What happened? Where is he? Well, you have to cancel this match. Then the next day, news comes out. Not only is Benoit dead, but his wife and son are also dead. And my first thought at this point was, it has to be like some kind of accident. It has to be like carbon monoxide poisoning.
Right.
There's no way it's anything else. That's just what it is. And WWE and Vince McMahon apparently felt the same way, because they ended up that night airing. They ended up like charging to USA Network, being like, "Oh, we got this. We've done dead wrestlers before. We're gonna get this guy on the air, and we're gonna air a tribute and all that." And it's like, hold your horses, Vince, because we don't know all the information yet. So as they're rolling out all these tributes and stuff, there's a fascinating snippet of an interview from from William Regal. I almost called him Lord Steven Regal from his WCW days. Lord Steve Regal, what a great name. But William Regal goes on the air. You know, everybody's crying and like telling their memories and stuff, but Steve Regal is very reserved, and he's like, "I don't want to say anything. I just want to say that the Chris Benoit that I knew was a good guy, a good dad, a good person, but I don't want to say anything because I think there's more to this story," or something along those lines. And he was very serious. He was not emotional at all.
Right.
And then, like, seriously, like 12 hours later, it's like, oh yeah, Chris Benoit killed his family and he hung himself on like a weight bench.
Yeah.
And it gets worse from there, because what you end up finding out is he killed his son with his wrestling move, the Crippler Crossface. He strangled him to death. And a few months later, they find out that Chris Benoit, his brain was so far gone and so rotten, I guess you'd say, from years of abuse, that he had the brain of an 80-year-old man with dementia, is how they described it.
Yeah.
So, this brings me to this point, which is when I say, when some celebrity, somebody famous that I like, does something terrible that I like, the first place it's not the only place my brain goes to, but the first place my brain goes to is, did this horrible act that this person do enable them? Did what I like about them enable them to do this horrible act? And with Benoit, for the first time, the answer was yes, it was. It was like, this guy was doing flying headbutts off the top rope for years and years and years. He was doing it off the top of steel cages onto like Kurt Angle on a Monday Night Raw. He wasn't even doing it on pay-per-views.
Mm-hmm.
And he let his brain get so bad that he killed his family. He killed his own son with his own finishing move, and he like laid Bibles next to their bodies and stuff. It's like freaking stuff you see on Dateline. It's horrible. It's horrifying. And from there, I'm like, I'm done. I helped enable this person by cheering for him, by like being there, by paying attention, by enjoying his work. Like, I helped enable this guy kill his family. That's how I felt. So I'm like, I'm done with wrestling. That's it. I'm not going to follow it anymore. Because that's too that's too much of a price to pay. That's fucking terrible. So yeah, that still haunts me to this day. That those murders really affected me badly. Like I'm never gonna follow wrestling the same way again, because that's just too much of a. I mean, two lives were taken. That's too much of a cost.
And football's not far behind.
It really isn't. It really isn't. Like, you're totally right to say that. So yeah.
Yeah. It's tough. I struggle with that myself because I love watching college football. At the same time, it's like, man, I don't know if I'd let my high school kids do it. It's a tough call.
But yeah, I still like wrestling. I still like the goofy moments it provides. I'm not completely shut off from it, but as far as like, I'm not going to like disparage anybody for liking it or anything like that.
Yeah. And I think that they've actually taken some measures to.
Oh, they definitely did.
Direct skull smashes.
It wasn't just Benoit. It was like the Hardys and Edge and Christian and all those. Those guys were taking it too far anyway. But the Benoit thing was just way, way, way too much. And it was heartbreaking. And yeah, 2007. When I think of 2007, I'm not going to lie. The first thing I think of is Benoit. Benoit and... That's just like, no, there's no effing way I'm watching wrestling again. No way.
No way, man. Well, we can spike this with some, I guess, neutral news in that in 2007, the iPhone arrived.
Yeah. I mean, this was a big leap. It was like your phone wasn't just a phone. Norm MacDonald does a great bit in his last Letterman appearance where he says, like, in fact, if I told you I was taking your picture with a telephone, people would look at you odd. And he does this weird machination, like this pantomime of him like dialing
a rotary phone
while staring at somebody maniacally. It's pretty funny. But now it's with an iPhone. It's like, oh, that's what you're actually doing. You're not using your phone as a phone anymore. You're using it as a communication device, I guess, or as a small computer, but yeah,
a pocket top.
Pretty crazy.
It is. And 2007 was also the year of the Virginia Tech shooting.
Yeah,
which I was in Blacksburg for. Thankfully, no one close to me was impacted. At least their lives weren't. We were all impacted, but. Yeah, and thankfully I wasn't on campus that day, but I was on the way. I was on the bus on the way, and the bus driver just stops in the road.
Really?
And he's like obviously being talked to by someone. And the rest of, you know, we don't know what's going on. And again, you mentioned 2007. This year the iPhone came out. I mean, there's mobile phones, obviously, but we're not getting news that fast in 2007. And so we're like, why are you stopped, dude? We got to get to class. Like, we got to go. What are you doing? He's like, I've been told to not move the bus. And we're like, okay. Well, I'm telling you to move the bus because I got to go to class. So if we could just, you know, hit the pedal on the right, get her zooming down the road, you know, I'll drive it. Doesn't seem that hard. And so a lot of us ended up just leaving the bus and walking back to our apartments because we're like, well, that was fucking weird. And we go inside, and then we kind of find out like there's emails on our computers from the university, like, stay put, don't move. We turn on the news, and the news is like, hey, there's something going on in Blacksburg. And so we basically just spend the whole day glued to the television watching the news about what's going on, like less than a mile from where we are. And certainly a day that I won't forget. I had, you know, we had a roommate that was on campus that we couldn't get a hold of. My girlfriend was on campus because once the news got out and there's so much cell phone usage, like nobody could talk to anybody. And it became just cluttered news stations everywhere. Fans for miles, like your parents are trying to call you to see if you're okay and they can't get a hold of you. It was a rough hot minute.
I can't imagine.
To say the least. And I, you know, again, my experience, I was very lucky to have just only been in the town when it happened. Thank God it was not on campus. Blacksburg still remembers it. We had every April 16th, which was about 10 days ago as of this recording, there's a 3.2 mile run, so a little bit more than a 5K to commemorate the 32 victims that you can do. So thousands of people just do that little run, and there's always a nice memorial set up. So still a big part. We don't want to forget about it. Obviously, we want to forget about the worst parts and stay strong with it. But it's a weird thing. It's a weird thing to think that could happen to, like, it wasn't long ago we were watching Columbine on TV thinking how foreign and weird that is. And like, man, that's the chances of it ever happening to a place that you attend is pretty low. But as the days go by, the chances actually are increasing quite considerably, unfortunately.
I was going to say, unfortunately, these are becoming a little more common these days. But for a college campus in 2007, that had to have been completely, the places your brain goes where it's like, I don't even know where my brain would go. It would just kind of come unplugged, basically. Like, I'm not sure how I would react to a situation like that. I don't have a frame of reference for it at all. And then my heart goes out to you and anybody that had to freaking deal with that. I mean, I can't imagine. It's to have that happen to people you know and people you, or to anybody that were, if that happens to in your area or people you know or anything like that, it's just, how do you, I guess, yeah, I just don't know what to say.
It's weird. I don't think anybody really understands even when it's happening, like why is this happening? What is going on?
Yeah.
I think what's kind of crazy about it, you know, obviously we were starved for the news in the moment, but sort of once some of the details started coming out, like I was pushing back on it. You know, like, I think everybody kind of had this moment. Remember when, like, 9/11, like, you really wanted to pay attention and learn everything, but at some point you became so inundated, like, you kind of rejected news about it anymore, and you're like, I can't right now. I don't even want to think about this for 10 years. I don't want to read a book about this. I don't want to read an article about this for a very long time. I'm very much over it. And that kind of happened with the Virginia Tech shooting, to the point that it wasn't until last year that I, you know, kind of thinking about it, and there was I don't know if you've ever seen the show I Survived, where people tell accounts of when they were, you had these harrowing experiences. And there was one that featured someone that was in the Virginia Tech shooting. And there were details about that day that I had no idea about. And I thought, you know, I lived through the moment. I was very much privy to a lot of the details and news going on because, you know, students had to be alerted and warned. But there's a lot of, I had no idea about, because I just blocked it out for like 10, 15 years or however long. It was like, I don't want to hear about this. So it's crazy. It's takes a toll.
Is Blacksburg in the middle of nowhere? Because that's how I perceive it.
Oh, yeah. And it's not even offensive to say that. It's literally in the middle of nowhere.
It's a college town in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah. When the students aren't there, the town drops like 2/3 of its population. Like, it is,
right.
It's tiny. Yeah.
Kind of like Ames, Iowa, a little bit. But that's where my brother went to college.
Ames is like 3 times bigger than Blacksburg, if that gives you any
idea.
Is
it really?
Yeah. Oh, God, I've been to Ames and I was like, what is this?
You've been to Ames? Oh, no. Yeah. That's terrible. But Ames is nothing. Yeah. But wow, 3 times bigger than Blacksburg.
Easily.
But yeah, the thing is that it's tiny. It's a tiny little college town in this like horrible, like massive event. Is happening in this tiny little place is just, I don't know. It's got to take years and years to process something like that. Even as a bystander, I can't imagine the people that were directly affected by something like that. It's heartbreaking.
Absolutely. So, yeah.
Yeah.
But you know, it's united in a way too. So I think a lot of people went to school around then.
There's silver linings, you know, you got to take those for sure. Yeah.
Well, and to move on from that, and, you know, thanks for creating the space. You know, it was a big part of 2007, and I'm a host of this podcast, so obviously, you know, it makes sense we'd bring it up. But we have to talk about 2007, also the year that Facebook just went off the rails. That's when that was the year that they said, okay, we'll just open it up to mom and dad, too. You know, it's not just college kids. But at any rate, it I don't know if that was the specific year, but Facebook, this is when they just completely trounced MySpace.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say it definitely made an imprint on MySpace because this was, I couldn't tell you, I couldn't pin down a year or a day or anything like that, but there was definitely a certain era where Facebook was breathing down the neck of MySpace, and then MySpace just never changed, really. It just kind of stayed the way it was, whereas Facebook was like this new appealing thing that everybody was on. It was a more mature social media thing. Isn't that funny?
Yeah. To think it's kind of weird now, to think about that. Yeah.
Because now Facebook is nothing but old people. But back then it was like, oh, MySpace is for teenagers. Facebook is for college students and for like people in their 20s and stuff like that. And it's a weird thing to think about in retrospect, but that's the way it was in 2007.
Yeah. And if you go to MySpace now, it's like, hey, sign in with your Facebook account to find friends who are already on MySpace.
Yikes. That's a big yikes.
Yeah.
What instant message service were you using in 2007 if you had to? Yeah. Were you using all of them or just one?
So MSN was real strong in my hometown. So when I wanted to talk to my hometown folk from college, I'd always get the MSN going. But among the college folk, AIM was the bread and the butter for us. Okay. That's what we used mainly. Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, I used AIM when I was younger, but MSN was my shit.
Yeah.
Like, I still have, I don't know how I got this, but I have a list of, I think when my MSN count just kind of, I don't know, died or like expired or something, I ended up getting a list of usernames that I had. And I remember a time when I was changing my username like every 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And it was like ridiculous shit. Like my name was Dick England for a second, or, you know, like Steve Nigeria, or I don't understand what the hell I was thinking at the time coming up with these names. And it was just like, what the hell is my, what am I doing? Like, I used MSN a lot, I guess, is my point.
Yeah. I mean, I'm right there with you, man. I would change mine to like newscasters that no one cared about. I'd be like Bernard Shaw.
Yeah. And you can put their picture as your avatar, and you can act like you're,
And I was like, why don't girls ever talk to me? I mean, I'm like, hey, I'm, why is your name Bernard Shaw? No, it's just a joke I have with myself. Don't worry about it.
I'm Hello, not Bernard. Strange.
Yeah. Like, why are you Tom Brokaw Bernard? Today? Like, I'm just having fun. You know, I'm just hanging in there. I'm having a good time. Why are you Larry King? Like, come on. Don't you get it? I'm all the different guys. No one cared. No one liked it.
At one point, I remember Wolf Blitzer carrying around a blank piece of paper was like one of my names. Because I remember one election cycle, it's probably like 2012 or something, where it was the Romney Obama election, where Wolf Blitzer was just wandering around the studio with a blank piece of paper, a seemingly blank piece of paper. Mm-hmm. And then they zoomed in on it, and it was just a bunch of doodles.
I love that Wolf Blitzer got to 61 years old and then just said, you know what, I'm not going to age anymore. I'm just going to be 61 forever.
Yeah, he's going to be 61 forever. He's going to be like 101. He's going to still look the same.
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much. Advice Animals, man, that was big. The memeage really took a big spike, where I don't want to say memes became mainstream, because that is memes, but like everybody felt like were empowered with the ability to make memes, so they were everywhere.
Well, that's the thing, is that this was kind of a, a byproduct of social media, is like, okay, we need a way to communicate common ideas across a whole big network. And so as a result of that, we had Velociraptor guy, Velociraptor. We had, remember Rage comics? Like, those were big. Like, stuff like that.
I hated those.
Like,
those images always made me...
I know. Those images always looked terrible. They look even worse now, because now we see them in higher resolution, and they look so bad. But, I mean, there were still some funny jokes in there. My favorite was always the really stoned guy.
Yeah.
because the guy like leaning back
yes.
against yep. the wall, because I knew a guy in my tech school that looked exactly like that guy. So Corey Zentner, wherever you are, I always think of you as the guy that's leaning against the wall and that stoned meme.
And there was like a time where like you could be there at ground zero when a meme kicked up. I remember the day and the post on Reddit when ridiculously photogenic guy became a thing. You know, the guy that's running and smiling.
The running guy, yeah.
And that was just a picture that was posted in pics on Reddit. And someone was like, man, that guy's ridiculously photogenic. And then like, seriously, that was like the moment that the meme was born. I was like, I feel like I was like there. Like I saw it happen. I was like one of the early ones there to update it. I was like, fuck yeah, he does. That is a ridiculously photogenic guy. And then within minutes, just, you know, the memes were all over the place. So you don't really see that anymore. You can't be like the internet, you know, even that short amount of time since then, the internet is even more fractured now to where it's really hard to be at ground zero for anything that happens.
It's too many people. Like,
too many
it's,
goddamn people.
Yeah, exactly. There were fewer people back then. So it was easier to convene and to have communal experiences. Now it's everybody's everywhere, so whatever. But we still printed directions.
That's the thing. People still print it in 2007.
We went to MapQuest.com. We printed that stuff out on overpriced inkjet cartridges on crappy Epson inkjet printers. Yep. And God, do I not miss that. That was... especially when you, if you live in a place like the Twin Cities where you have to get around a city like St. Paul or get around a city like Minneapolis, it's freaking, it's the worst.
I bet. But, yeah, man. And then I think like if your parents were rich, they might have had a TomTom in the car, in their Lincoln Navigator, right? But most people were printing it.
I have not heard that in a million years. TomTom. Holy cow. But yeah, no, that's perfect. That's perfect. We also had Charlie bit my finger.
That was huge. Yeah, we got about five video references here for stuff that was just sweeping the internet.
Because
Charlie bit my finger was huge.
YouTube was really catching on. Why wouldn't it? It's a video service. Streamlined to get to people quicker and faster and stuff. So of course it's going to work right for Charlie Bit My Finger and Chocolate Rain.
Chocolate Rain.
Chocolate Rain.
So good. Rick Rolling kicked off in 2007. Still strong today. Although I haven't been Rick Rolled in a minute.
I like that song.
I do too.
I've always liked that song. I always the video is terrible.
I mean, that's why it's lit. Yeah, that's why it's great.
Yeah.
It's fun to get Rickrolled.
I remember seeing that video lampooned on We Love the 80s. Remember that on
VH1? Like VH1, yeah.
And I remember Hal Sparks in particular saying about Rick Astley, he was mocking him saying, I'm a little redhead white guy with a big old black voice. And I'm like, well, that big old black voice now just... is immortal because of the internet. So yeah
it is true. His voice doesn't look like it should come out of him, but it does.
He looks like a shrimpy little nerd, but he's got a big ass voice. He's got some chords on him, that's for sure.
Yeah, indeed. That was also leave Britney alone.
I don't know, I got nothing.
Chris Crocker, you don't remember that?
I mean, I do, but like,
no,
I guess should we have left Britney alone? I don't know. I never came to a conclusion on that.
We probably should have left Britney alone. And then what in the butt, popularized by South Park.
Can I just do like fart sounds for this?
If you'd like.
Do you have a good fart sound?
You mean like with my mouth, or do you mean like do my farts have a good bass?
No, I mean like with your mouth. Like, what was your fart? What was your go-to?
Can you imagine
fart
if that's
sound?
What you asked me? Like, dude, what's the timbre of your farts typically? Like, is it like a G sharp, or what are you dangling back there?
If you had to make a friend laugh with a fart sound, like, I out of nowhere. Like, what's your go-to? Are you making it just with your mouth? Are you putting a hand to the face?
Sure. I mean, I think I'm probably, you know, if I'm just doing your regular old Christian fart sound, I'm probably just going, you know, regular, like with my lips. But if I really wanted to make someone laugh, I would do the anti-fart where I would do something like squirrel. Like, I would make it say something funny or squeak.
Really? Okay, so you get really creative with it. Okay,
of course.
You're an
yeah.
artist.
Hey, man.
You're an artist with the farts.
Professional okay. comedian. I gotta be on my toes. I gotta be bringing
wonderful.
Out the freshest fart comedy.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
No, I think that's wonderful. my friend Sean that I grew up with, he had, I swear to God, this dude was like the Michael Jordan of fart sounds. Like he, it was just a simple matter of putting his right hand to his mouth with his fingers tucked in, and he would just like blow into his hand, and it would be this machine gun fart, and it was consistent, and it was every single time, and it
wow.
was reliable, and it made us laugh every single time. It was basically like the, I don't know, the Tony Gwynn of fart sounds. Like, it was like this dude like hit 300 every year with his farts. It was just wonderful. It was a delight. It was, I wish I could replicate it. It's I so badly because it was just wonderful.
You hyped
Sean,
it up there. I was
you
hoping
are.
You had like a sound bite. You're like, and I'm ready to play it right
oh,
now.
Oh, I wish. You know, all right. I'm afraid. I'm kind of afraid to admit this, but I did try it when I was thinking about 2007. I saw what in the butt, and I thought of fart sounds.
Yeah.
And I tried to do my own fart sounds with my hands like I used to when I was a kid, and I can't do them anymore.
God damn it. That makes me so mad when that happens.
I know. Like, let me try it right now, if it's okay. I have to
no,
take
please.
My headphones off.
Yeah, yeah.
So I can't hear you, but I'm going to try.
Oh, my
right
God.
Now. Okay, headphones are off.
Okay, I'm just right here. I'm okay.
No, it's not even close.
Wow. No.
Not even remotely close. Okay, headphones back on. I can't remember.
Wow.
Like, it's like muscle memory. Like, I can't do it.
That sucks, man. That just sounded like a dump truck slowing down near your house. It didn't really do much for a fart.
Like hydraulics, like lifting or something.
Yeah. Huh. You know, I'd say keep at it, man. You know, maybe a couple weeks from now you come back and...
One day I'll find the spark, because I used to be able to do it with both hands. Sean, my friend Sean as a kid was a savant. He's the Michael Jordan. He inspired me. He still inspires me.
Sure.
It was a simple matter of taking one hand to the face, and it was just an automatic, like, machine gun of comedy. It was brilliant. The guy's a genius.
That's amazing.
Wherever you are, Sean, you're the greatest. But yeah.
I wonder if he can still do it. Wouldn't that be tragic if he was like,
same here, man.
Once my wisdom teeth got taken out, I lost some of the pressure in the back, and now don't get the same earth.
I never thought of that. A new mouth surgery.
Yeah. I mean, I can't whistle like I used to after my Invisalign. It's weird.
Oh, that kind of makes sense, though, I guess.
I mean, I can still whistle, like, with my lips, but, like, I used to do, like, a cool, like, you know, pull, like, with my finger and my teeth kind of thing. Like, just one of those, like, real good redneck whistles.
Oh, one of those whistles?
Yeah. Where you can, like, you can whistle from, like, 250 yards from a playground, and, like, kids will stop playing. They're like, what was that? Is this somebody mad at us? And I'm like, that's a good fucking whistle. But
I've
now
never
when I try this, just
like
spit flies out of my face. It's not good.
I can still whistle, kind of. Let me do it off... a wave, so I'm blowing sideways to the mic. Blowing.
Sure.
Can you hear that?
It's probably, you're probably recording it, but it's being gated by Discord, so I didn't hear it. So it'll probably come through good for the people at home.
Probably not. I thought I'd give it a shot, though. But,
nice.
Yeah, that was a treat for the people that stuck around with us for that long. And I think we have one more email to read.
I was going to say, we had to talk about one of the worst years on Earth. So it's good for folks to get a treat. Do you want me to take this episode? Or episode, this email? What are we doing?
Take this whole episode, Trev.
Let me just take it. Let me just take it, fucking delete it. All right, we got an email here from John Allen Riggs.
Riggs.
The number 100. This is... shows how long it takes us to get to emails. He says, congratulations on 100 episodes. First, Thanks. Apology. Oh, yeah, and thank you. And he says, first, an apology. Heartache 101 is real, but unlike the other games I mentioned, it's not on Steam. It's free on RPGmaker.net. If you recall, we got an email where we had to decide games and whatnot from John. So Heartache 101 is real. He says, second, it's been 25 years since Nintendo Power issue 100. I like that issue. It looked back on the best games on their consoles, but it was also a farewell to 8-bit and 16-bit games. I didn't look at another Nintendo Power issue until the Game Boy Advance era. So, have you ever thought, this is the end of a video game era? Sincerely, Alan Riggs. John Alan Riggs.
Yeah, I think we've... it's very recent when the 3DS store shut down. It's like, now Nintendo is only rolling, for the first time in forever, is only rolling with the Switch. They don't have a portable system and a console. Now they only have one thing. That feels like an end of an era to me. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, I can see that.
Like, it goes back to the Game Boy, to GBA, to DS, 3DS, and now suddenly Switch is both home console and portable. So, yeah, that's what sticks out to me. It's like, yeah, that's the first one that... Where that's,
yeah,
Nintendo is on their own with just Switch. It's kind of crazy.
It is wild. I guess I've never really felt like anything was like the end of an era. Like, I've never felt like there was a defining moment, but I do, it may be because a lot of eras just fizzle out, but I can recall more like beginning of an era thing, like the, a lot of the, I'm trying to think of like what you call something like Overwatch, but like that big push for those team tactical shooter games, big multiplayer games like that era about 2015, 2014, were like the single player campaign was like no longer a thing. We're going to do this other thing where you're going to get you and eight friends in a game and just run around and shoot each other. And a lot of people are into that, but I was like, man, that's not me. And I kind of felt like games were appealing to an audience that wasn't me anymore at that time. That's not true now because there's so many indie developers and developers in general that there's pretty much everything for every itch you have. But I felt like the mainstream stuff went a different direction than I was interested in around that time. So maybe I can point to that.
You're totally right. That's an excellent point you just made where the single player campaign was kind of dying. And it started, I think, with Call of Duty 4, Modern Warfare, and like a lot of those first-person shooter games, like Overwatch. I mean, Overwatch was a million years later, but this was kind of the start. 2007 was kind of the start of that, wasn't it? Like, it was single-player campaigns kind of weren't prioritized. It was more the multiplayer experience, and that was kind of a bummer. I kind of got it because I liked playing multiplayer with a lot of people, but at the same time, it's like I do like, you know, I don't want to just rely on Madden and NHL for my single player experience.
Right.
Stuff.
And I think they've gone back on that a little bit. I feel like they've sort of re-embraced the single player campaigns a bit more. But for a while, it was not an emphasis at all. We're like, there was an entire E3 where I was like, is there going to be anything I like? There usually is. But good question, John. That's a interesting
great question.
All right. I think it's going to round out 2007. Damn, this episode's about as long as the year.
Well, I hope it's not too long because it's, Jesus, this is long. Anyway, thanks for listening.
A long episode, but it'll hold people over until 2008. Will that be the last year we cover? You'll never know. But that's been another Drunk Friend podcast. And you head on over to polymedianetwork.com. We mentioned Tales of the Lesser Medium earlier. We got that over there. We got Polykill over there. We got Point and Drink Adventure. Of course, that's with our pals Pam and Petey. We got Indie Quest for your indie games. We got Uncle Doug's DVD bin for your everyday movie watching. We got Split Up for your horror movie watching. And we got Goosebumps for your children's scary books. We got everything that you could ever want. You could also send an email to this show in particular, just like John Alan Riggs did, just like Blake, just like Josh Lopez, at drunkfriendpodcast@gmail.com. Be cool like those guys. Send an email And also, if you'd like to interact with us directly, some people have. It's been great. You can head on over to our subreddit at reddit.com/r/polymedia network and interact with the posts there. We'll post all the podcasts there and drum up some conversation.
That's right. And if you're not interested in sending an email, no big deal. Just give us a rating and review on a podcast. Happy new choice of us a big time.
You can find us on social media on Twitter now. I'm at Trav Plays Games and Alex. I bet you won't guess. Up, you guessed it. SNES Drunk. That's where.
Well, you guessed wrong. I'm at a lot of places because Twitter is horse shit. And the track you hear was composed by our friend Cooler. And it's called Electric Star Pounce. Star Bounce, rather, not Pounce.
First time you've missed that
one. I'm trying to run through this as quickly as I can because it's funny and you can land finally because it's Buzzsprout Podcast page. Thirst question logo.
Did it.
That was bad. Let me try that again.
I feel like you said all that in cursive.
That's pretty good. You can find a link to more of his music on the Buzzsprout podcast page, and a shout out to Josh Leslie for our thirst quenching logo.
Be sure to catch us all on YouTube, and thank you for listening,
and we hope you have a great rest of your day.
Wow.